Welcome everyone to the podcast, Soccer is Life. My name is Karim.
Axel speaking here. Welcome everybody. We're back on a regular schedule and it's the end of the Premier League season, so that's what happens. But yeah, so we're here to do a little recap.
Yeah, we'll do like a light recap of the, you know, just the Premier League in general. And then hopefully we'll have another episode with a lot more people where we do like a really wide recap, have different people supporting different, you know, teams.
Yeah, we'll try.
Hopefully we get Mo back. We'll get a Liverpool fan, Man U fan, Axel, and we'll see who we can bring to the table as well.
I'm up for auction, by the way. If anybody wants me, they can, you know, just put up the money, and we'll see what we can do. You know what I mean? We can discuss if you hit up the DMs. But yeah, I mean, let's just discuss like how we lived Sunday, basically. So the episode that Karim just talked about, we're gonna try to do that between now and the Champions League final. So that'll be what, in about 10 days or so, something like that.
Yeah, and 3 weeks, man.
3 weeks, yeah. Well, two, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go.
All right. So let's. You want from the top or from the bottom? Do you want to talk? The question is, do you want to talk about Manchester United right now, or do you want to talk about Man U?
No, let's end it. Let's go from top to bottom.
From top to bottom. Yeah. All right, man. Man City. You know, won the Premier League back to back.
Yeah, first team to defend the Premier League since United won it 3 times in a row. Actually, I believe 07, 08, 09, when Ronaldo was here, when we're, you know, still winning Champions League, dominating, competing for them, because right now we're a dinosaur team. And yeah, so Manchester City, I mean, you know, congratulations to Pep Guardiola who did it. And I mean, we're going to talk about Liverpool afterwards as well, but this might be like the most competitive, I wouldn't say the most competitive like as a league, but I would say as a two-horse race,
yeah,
between Liverpool and Manchester City.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you know, Arsenal and United, you know, in the 90s, you had Chelsea, United in the early 2000s as well. You know, who were really, really getting competitive, but this one was like something to really remember. You know, how close they were, you know, how many games they won in a row. Both of the teams, you know, just chasing each other, you know, putting pressure on each other. So yeah, definitely a brilliant season for them. And this is an achievement for Pep Guardiola as well, you know. But you know, to me, I would say how can I put that? It's the look, the league doesn't lie. Like the table, the position that doesn't lie, you know. To me, this is the accumulation of, you know, real work, like real planning, real organization behind Manchester City. And obviously, you know, Pep Guardiola's work ethic as well. This is a guy who was hired in, what, the summer 2016?
Yeah.
That's when Leicester City won the league. I believe Arsenal was second. And City third, United fourth, or something like that. You know, so you know, at the first year that he had a hard season, still finished third, but you know, compared to the expectations that we have of him, so it was a tough season for him. You know, a season of adaptation. And then next year, he was able to get all his guys.
He revamped all the team.
He got rid of Joe Hart.
Since 2006. I think I've never seen like a team change skin. Like, or actually, a lot of teams that get promoted to the Premier League, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But like the team that is usually at the top of the table, get rid of so many players and buy so many the other players as well. It was, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so yeah. To be fair to him, he gave them their chance. He you know, he came there for 1 year. He saw how everybody could play. Actually, Joe Hart, he just got out the way like immediately.
Yeah. Joe Hart is the only one. A lot of people like Kolarov, Sanya, Zabaleta,
Clichy, Milner as well.
Milner, Dzeko, Ivotic.
Yeah.
A lot of players, man.
Yeah, but Joe Hart, you know, that was like a contentious thing because, you know, he'd been there since 2006 before they were bought by the Sheikh. He was probably there before Vincent Kompany as well because he got there in 08, I believe. But, I mean, to me, it was the right decision, you know, for Pep. I understand that, you know, it was like disrespectful, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, yo, the guy likes to play from the back. The guy, I mean, you're seeing players like goalkeepers like Ederson revolutionizing the position, the goal playing goalkeeper position. So that just shows you like how he wants his team to play. If you're a goalkeeper and you don't have feet, you can't play in this team. I mean, David De Gea cannot play in a Pep Guardiola team because he doesn't have feet, for example. So that was those are the hard decisions that needed to be made for him to succeed. And you see at other clubs, you know, not to mention any names, you don't see those type of decisions ever. You know, he bought Claudio Bravo,
yeah,
for like 70 or 60 million, something like that. He wasn't good enough. Next year, he bought Ederson for 70 mil. Yeah. Like this is the pursuit of football excellence. Like that's it, nothing more, nothing less. And yeah, so it was a tremendous year for them. Obviously disappointing in the Champions League for second year in a row, thrown out by.
But I believe it was the first time they qualified to the semifinal. No, am I mistaken?
Weren't they in the semifinal last year when Liverpool eliminated
them?
No. Who did Liverpool play before Madrid?
They played Roma.
Liverpool played Roma?
Yeah.
Oh, because Roma eliminated Barcelona.
Yeah, I think it's the first time they qualified to the semifinals.
Yeah, so you can say progress.
Or maybe back in the days, but, you know, recent era, I don't believe they went to the semifinals with all the different managers that they had.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, so, I mean, congratulations to them. They had a few issues as well. I won't say issues, but, you know, some players that were crucial during last year. Last year's campaign were not really available the entire season.
Yeah, their best player last year, De Bruyne, not really play a big role this season.
We can say he didn't have a role season. He didn't have a role at all.
Yeah.
You know, same thing for Vincent Kompany every year. I think he hasn't played like more than 20 games since 2014, 2015, something like that, if I remember. But you have other players who really, really stepped it up. Like we can talk about Sterling, who really stepped it up, in my opinion. A player who has really matured professionally, like on the pitch, but also personally, I think. You have players like freaking Bernardo Silva. Probably if I had to pick like my favorite player for City this year, I'll go for him.
Yeah,
in my opinion, he had an unbelievable season. I remember last year when he was not playing that much, Pep Guardiola had this sentence when he said, there was this quote he said, as long as I'm here in this in charge of this team, Bernardo Silva will never be sold. So that's the standard and the expectations that he had for this guy. And this year, I have to say, he really stepped it up. You have, you know, players like Fernandinho who, you know, they're still good. They're still, you know, putting in work. Kyle Walker as well. But
name?
I think
Gundogan, I believe, played a really crucial role in replacing Fernandinho. In this position, which was a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the season, they were looking to bring Jorginho, who ended up going to Chelsea. They were really looking to find someone who can play at this position, because mm-hmm. Fernandinho is old and is only getting older.
Yeah.
But Gundogan, you know, was able to play in this position and play it pretty well. Another position they were looking for a replacement, but they might have one, is for the left back. Mm. They were looking to buy, because Mendy had a lot of different injuries and he has been unreliable for the past couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Since he joined, but Zinchenko stepped up and played pretty well, or at least Pep Guardiola is satisfied with him. So,
yeah,
you know.
But do you think that Jorginho could have played this position for Pep? I don't believe he could have, because I don't really see the nasty streak in him. You know, I remember Pep Guardiola when he was at Barcelona, he had Busquets. Obviously, a player who's very tidy, footballing-wise. But he has this, like, you know, this little vicious side to him. You know, he can do the hard work. He can do the dirty work. The dark arts, as we call it, you know, and Fernandinho does the same thing. We often talk about this tactical foul, you know, that Pep Guardiola, he denies it, which is so funny. But, I mean, you see Fernandinho playing, he's like, he does something very specific, you know, where, you know, it's a tactical foul. So, like, he always gets a yellow card for that, which is a yellow card that you want to have. Like, it's one of those that you actually applaud. So it's not a bad decision from you. So I don't believe that Jorginho could have played that position. I don't know.
I think he would have changed his demands or style of play just for him.
And he's not physical as well.
I think he would have he would have brought a lot of options to the team, especially if you want to play him at this position and have someone really creative.
Yeah.
Playing from this far in the back of the midfield, I think it would have been, you know, pretty different. I think Guardiola knows what he wants out of each player, and I think he wanted to do something really specific with Jorginho, but he didn't end up getting the player that he wanted. So
yeah, I mean, my last point for City will be so players like Fernandinho, Kyle Walker, maybe Otamendi as well, I foresee. But to me, these are players who are still delivering. You know, they're still bringing the goods. At home, but I think they're going to be phased out this summer. And
Kyle Walker?
Yeah, I think so.
And this really? And who else?
Fernandinho as well.
You think so?
Yeah, I think they will.
Oh, man, you're making a big bet.
When I say phased out, I'm not saying that they won't be playing anymore or they'll be sold. No, I think that Pep Guardiola as a manager, he's just looking at the next one. The thing is, if you want to maintain a good team, I mean a great team actually in this case, you have to replace people before they expire. Organizations like Manchester United, players who expired 6, 7, 8 years ago, but they're still there, you know. Manchester City, they're constantly upgrading. So even if a player still got it, if Pep Guardiola sees that, you know what, this guy, he's not too focused. He won the league twice already. Maybe he won't be as focused next year. Maybe he won't be as hungry next year. Let me get a new guy. So there's this phasing out of players who are still delivering. Who other teams in the top four will take, to be honest with you. But they're getting replaced. And I think that this is what we're going to see from him this summer, you know. Obviously, no World Cup this summer as well. So players will be fresh.
Yeah, but apparently not. You know why? Because there's Copa America.
Oh, the Copa America. That's
there is,
right.
African Cup of Nations. Yeah. And there is a European Nations Cup, a friendly, whatever. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, the League Nation.
But I think it's a big complaint that most of the players were not going to get rest actually this summer, to be honest. Because a lot of them are going to play with their national teams. Yeah. But like as a summary, maybe like out of 10, what would you give Man City this season?
I'll give them a... You know what? I have two ratings. I have the rating... No, I do.
Come on, man.
No, seriously. So okay, let me explain you why. Because I'll give them like 8.5-ish.
Okay. For what? For the Premier League? Or
just for what they did, you know? Okay. Winning it again, for defending it.
Okay.
You know, but on the other hand, they were competing against a Liverpool team that, you know, breathed down their neck like until the very last second.
Yeah.
You know, they ended with 97 points and 98 points respectively. I mean, this is unbelievable. I don't think you'll see that ever again.
Yeah.
For example. So, you know, if it was just like City standards, you know, compared to last year, I would give them like an 8.5. But I might give them a 9 just because, you know, they're the first the first team to defend the title.
Sure.
The unbelievable competition that they had from Liverpool. You know, they won their previous 14 games, you know, all of them in a row. Because that's what they had to do when Liverpool was competing against them. This is a team that, you know, for the last I don't know how many ever games that they played after Liverpool. Obviously, Liverpool kept winning as well.
Yeah.
So they had that mental pressure of, okay, fuck, Liverpool won, we gotta win today. There's just like no options at all.
Yeah.
So I'd say 8.5, 9.
8.5. Okay. Yeah. I would. For me personally, I would just give them an 8, and it might be even like a 8. I don't know. Maybe a 7.5, but no. Like I would actually just go with an 8. Mm. And the reasons are, I think the squad that they have and the money that they spent should logically put them way ahead of all the other Premier League teams, so it just feels normal. I mean, it's very challenging, but it feels normal to win the Premier League title again, even though Liverpool were really brilliant.
Yeah.
But if you compare just the amount of money that have been spent to the club, I think that I would give them an 8, and the other reason is because they were out of the Champions League. They did not, I mean, if they qualified to the final of the Champions League, I would have bumped it to a 9.
Mm.
But, you know, for me, it's just an 8. Good season, you know, pretty solid, pretty good season, but not excellent. So
Like I said, I just added those extra points because of what they were facing. That's just the other thing. If Liverpool finished like maybe 5 points below, or if like City, you know, won the league like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the end of the Premier League, then, you know, I would have had just a normal good score as well of 8. Okay. But, you know, because of what they had to endure.
Okay, got it.
All right, next, Liverpool.
Yeah. So Liverpool, man, their season is not over. They still have the final of the Champions League, of course, against Tottenham. You know, overall, it was a very interesting season. I think they started the season with a slightly different formation than what they used to. They were trying to step away from the 4-2-3-1. No, from the 4-3-3 and try to play with the 4-2-3-1 and putting Salah up front. Maybe, you know, try to help him score more and more goals. But I think as the season progressed, they came back to their 4-3-3. Mm-hmm. And I have my doubts that was actually an ask from Salah himself. I think he really likes to be on the right flank and then, you know, get the ball a little bit outside of the box instead of just being like inside of the box, try to score goals with one touch. I really have my doubts. I thought that Klopp has stepped back from his ambition to play as a 4-2-3-1. I don't know, because it was starting to click, it was starting to work. Salah was starting to score goals. He scored a hat trick, and after his hat trick, they decided to go back to a 4-3-3. They bought a couple, you know, interesting players. Naby Keita got Steven Gerrard's jersey, which was really a big responsibility for him. But this season was not his. He really showed.
It was a weird one
the best of his abilities at the end of the season, and then when they were playing their most important game against Barcelona in the Camp Nou, he got injured. So he did not really have the chance to show all his abilities. Fabinho, you know, started really, really slow. I think he did not start for the first like 8 Premier League games. He wasn't even in the squad, but slowly and surely he made his mark, and now I think he's in the starting 11. Henderson changed his position from a defensive mid to a center mid. And I really like his new position, but I think next year he's going to face competition from Chamberlain. And between him and Chamberlain, I don't know who you're going to put in his position. But, you know, overall, Liverpool, I think they being consistent is what they strive for. It's the only team that was in the semifinals for 2 years in a row, and it's the only team right now that is in the final of the Champions League 2 years in a row. So they still have a game that will determine a lot of how successful this season is, but so far, man, I would, you know, if I had to give them a score, I would put like an 8.5, to be honest. If we even consider that they would lose the Champions League, I would still give them an 8.5.
Yeah, I would.
If they win the Champions League, I would go for a 9, but
yeah, I'll give them a 8.5 as well. And what I told you last week, after the Barcelona game, I said, whatever happens from now on, from here on out, whatever happens, I would say that Liverpool was the team of the year, like in Europe, because of what they did. You know, obviously domestically, they were very close to the finish line. It's not much that they could have done. People would say, you know, people who are cynical, they will be like, oh, this is the moment when Liverpool lost the title. This is the moment when City won the title.
Yeah.
Look, there's 1 point difference.
Yeah.
There's 1 point difference, and they have a goal difference of 5, you know? And, you know, basically Man City won 4-1 yesterday, so that contributed to that as well. But this is both teams deserve to win the league, you can say easily. And, you know, I don't believe that they could have done anything more. I think they did everything that they could have done, to be honest. You know, that's what Jurgen Klopp said. To me, best team in Europe, regardless of what happens at the end. Obviously, I would enjoy if Tottenham wins it, but regardless of what happens, best team. This is a team that won 20. I remember, you know, last year, obviously, they were in the finals of the Champions League. But at the end, you feel like they had to prioritize a little bit.
Yeah,
the Champions League,
because they finished, I think, at the end like fourth.
They finished fourth.
Yeah, fourth, and they were fighting for the second spot.
Yeah,
with Manchester United, but at the end,
exactly. Yeah, they finished fourth, and so this is a team that, you know, if you compare to last year, I mean, this year they're in the final of the Champions League again for the second year in a row. Shout out to Coutinho, by the way, and I think they have 28 more points than they did last year.
Yeah.
So that's something that we have to talk about as well. These are the demands and the standards that were set. This is a team that, you know, last year, I want to talk about the year before last year, actually. Wait, I'm getting confused. No, last year. This is a team that had didn't have a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I'll just straight up say they didn't have a goalkeeper. They were playing with 10 people. You know, the whole thing with Mignolet, Karius, you know, interchanging them both, I think it was always a disaster. And, you know, this is a team that saw problems, identified problems, and worked to fix the problems. This is a team that finished fourth. They signed a goalkeeper because they had no goalkeeper, and a world-class goalkeeper at that. They didn't have a defense, really. You know, it was really a joke. Even when the front three was firing for Liverpool, the defense was still a joke before January of last year when Van Dijk was bought. So they saw that problem, they fixed that problem as well. You know, 75 mil, they dropped that shit on Van Dijk. People were saying, oh, it's too much, no, he's not worth that much. But I think, you know, all of the people who thought that, they're now like swallowing their words because, you know, he's easily the best defender in the world right now. So they fixed that as well, you know. They thought that the front three was not enough and that, you know, they could rest some of the front three, you know, at times. So they bought Shaqiri, cut price deal, you know, 10 mil because Stoke City was relegated. So they really needed the money badly. They brought back Origi as well. I believe that he wanted to go. He wanted to be sold, but Klopp told him, you know what, this is going to be a tough season. I'm not going to promise you game time because you know what's our front three. But what I can assure you is that there's a role for you in this team. If you show me that you can work hard enough, there's definitely a role for you. And you'll definitely get a couple games here and there. And we can say that he's arguably scored some of the most important goals of the season.
Yeah.
He scored against Everton.
Barcelona.
He scored against Newcastle last minute, all of this. He's scored against Barcelona as well in the last few minutes. So this is a guy who, you know, I mean, he didn't really have a season that we can talk about enough. But he played a big role in crucial moments. When he was called on, he delivered big time.
True.
And also they got a guy like, you know, Naby Keita. Obviously, Chamberlain had a nasty injury last year that ended his year. And you basically, you know, deprived him of this year. So they bought, you know, Naby Keita, who also, I mean, he sounded like it was the best thing since sliced bread in the first three or four games, you know, the way we were talking about him.
Yeah.
So this is a team that, you know, identified problems and just worked to fix them. And now what happens? They won 28 more points than they did last year. So that's something they have to talk about as well. And I'll finish my Liverpool point by saying, I mean, can you believe it? 97 points and you're not champion. What I read, I think, like, if you take into account the last 26 seasons... Basically, since the Premier League came into effect, and this was in 92, if you take into account those 26 seasons, they would have been champion 24 out of 26 times. And I believe Chelsea did that with Mourinho, like the first
phase. They had actually 94, I think.
94?
Yeah, they had 94 points.
Yeah. So, Chelsea. And then, obviously, Manchester City last year when they had 100 points.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is something that is tremendous. I mean, to me, like, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, you can't just say, okay, Liverpool had 98, 97 points and City had 98 points. Because what happens is that this is a zero-sum game. Like, there's only a certain, you know, amount of points to be taken. You can't have 98 points for the first, 97 points for the second, and let's say, like, 90 points for the third. No, because it always gets redistributed. So this... You know, not to take away from Liverpool and Manchester City season, but you have to take into account the way that Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal, United performed this season as well. And that, I believe, you know, contributes to why these two teams were so tight like that, like dominantly and comfortably at the top. But I would say, yeah, I mean, fantastic season from them. You know, they got 97 points. They conceded the fewest goals. Van Dijk won Player of the Year. Mane and Salah joined top Premier League top scorers as well. Alisson, you know, most clean sheets. And they didn't drop a single point for 70 days. That's,
yeah,
you know, that's it.
It's the consistency. It's the hard work.
That's it. So, crazy season for them. And, I mean, it's unbelievable that they didn't win it with this amount of points and all the stats that I just listed.
All right, man. Coming in third, Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a new manager, Sarri. They had a new player in the starting 11, Jorginho. I think the rest of the squad are pretty much the same players.
Yeah.
The same starting 11. They had a change of tactics. Kante was playing more. Jorginho took Kante's position of defensive midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Kante was playing more up front, scoring a little bit more goals than usual. Having more freedom to help the offensive players, which was a really a non-typical role.
Yeah.
For Kante, but he was able to execute it, you know, arguably well.
Yeah, I would say well, because, you know, that's just Kante and that's how he is as a player and as a person as well. But to me, there's no comparison. I mean, this is just like a manager's choice and whatever that is comfortable with, you know, as far as the system and all that. Because for me, I mean, Kante is the best at his actual role in the world. I mean, you can't. It's almost like a waste of a position to put him up there, you know. But I understand if you have to accommodate Jorginho as well. What I would say, though, is that I understand, you know, as a manager, you have your philosophy and you can't, like, veer away from that, you know. But I would say that Sarri got it wrong because we didn't really see a willingness from him to try different things, you know. Mm. And you know what? Like, some people are just too proud and they think that if they try something else, it's like an admission that they're wrong. No. The fact is, you can still keep Jorginho at the number five there, but you can have Kante maybe like on like side by side with him.
Yeah.
Meaning that Kante will be right around him. He will protect him. He's obviously more useful when you don't have the ball than when you have the ball. And, you know, he can protect a player like Jorginho. I don't really know American football too much as far as position and all that. But Kante will be one of the players who would tackle whichever player that will try to tackle the quarterback, which will be Jorginho, so that Jorginho has time and space to operate as he should be able to operate, as he did in Napoli last year and all of the years before. So I think he could have tried that as well, but, you know, we didn't really see a willingness from him to try different things.
Yeah, I think he has a certain view and philosophy of the game.
Yeah, fair
that,
enough.
That if he has to change, like changing a tactic for him is not just simply changing the position of one player or so. I think for him it's a whole, like, changing his whole system of belief.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't, you know, I don't know if that's really possible at this point, given how far he got into his managerial career, and also given that he's not a former soccer player. He did not really play at the highest level.
No, and even so, as a coach, he started really late. He was always this is a guy who was came from the banking world. He actually had an international career as a banker. He was working in London, Switzerland as well. But this is a guy who he was always coaching, like, amateur sides.
Yeah.
Like, you know, extra as an extracurricular activity, if you will. So this is a guy who was always passionate about football. And one day, you know, when he was comfortable financially and all that, he just decided to drop everything and become a full-time coach. So he was rewarded by that. And this is something that we see in Italy, but we don't really see in other. We don't see in England, for example. Like in Italy, the way they look at coaches, the reason why you have, like, out of all of the 18 teams, you have 18 managers who are Italians. It's because they look from within all the time. They go to Serie B, Serie C, they go to like some amateur sites for sometimes, you know, they see who are the coaches who are being talked about, you know, that they're doing great things, that they're doing different things.
Okay.
And then they always pick them from the bottom like that. Same thing with the Eusebio Di Francesco, for example, you know, Roma's coach last year. I know he had a weird one this year when he was sacked, but this is just an example, you know. And we don't do that in England, you know, like out of the I mean, let's pick the top six teams. I mean, there's no British coaches there.
Yeah.
There are actually no British coach. Top seven, no British coach. Top eight, no British coach. And then ninth, Leicester City, they have Brendan Rodgers right now. Yeah. But before that, they had Claude Puel. So, yeah, it's... anyway, that's a conversation for another team. I got sidelined for a little bit. But Chelsea, yeah, I think they had an up-and-down season. They started wonderfully. I think Sarri had like maybe 14 games unbeaten, something like that. It took a long time for them to be...
I think they won their first 10 games or so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember like I was talking to some of my friends who are Chelsea fans, and they were like, "We're gonna win the league. We're gonna win the league." Because you know how they like to do it. They win it this season, and the next year they finish 10th. They win it this year, the year after, and then they finish 15th, and then they win. You know, so one year they exist, one year they don't exist, et cetera, et cetera. But then they just like completely dipped. But the fascinating thing for me is that. Eden Hazard had his best season stat-wise.
Because he scored more goals than usual.
Yeah, more goals than usual. I say stat-wise, but in my opinion, he didn't have his best season, like, overall, period. Okay. In my opinion, his best season was maybe the first year when Mourinho came back in 2015. Yeah. I mean, he came back in 2013, but when they won it in 2015... In my opinion, maybe that was like his best season. Also, to me, you can't have your best season if you're not even playing in the Champions League, if you're a Champions League caliber player. So, I mean, we can talk about Pogba as well. He had his best season stat-wise far as like most goals and most assists that he's ever done. But did he have? Was that his best season at all? Yeah, like, far from it. So these are things that we have to like look into and unpack all the time.
Yeah.
But
what's
score
for what score would you give Chelsea?
Chelsea, I would say 6.
6?
Yeah, 6.5.
They're in the final of the Europa League. They had a new coach. Were they even top 4 last year? I don't believe so.
Okay, so maybe that's a little harsh, but what I mean is
did you say 6?
Yeah, to me it's I mean, you look at Arsenal, it's the same thing. They had a good Europa League run.
Yeah.
But in the league, you know, there wasn't much there, you know. We're talking about the Premier League here.
Okay.
And of course, we can't help but think about the Champions League and the Europa League. I would say 6.5, whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I would, to be honest, man, I would give them an 8.
What I would say is that the only thing that I would say, I mean, they finished 3rd, of course.
Okay.
They're the best of the worst bunch to me. To me, there are two groups.
Yeah, the top 2 6. And then
the top 2.
Yeah,
and then the other 4 is there.
Yeah.
Because what did we see in the last 4 or 5 weeks?
Yeah.
We saw teams that are fighting for the top 4 and that are losing.
Yeah.
Like on a weekly basis. Losing one after another. And to me that just shows the quality.
Man,
I don't know, man.
How I see it is actually Sarri did not like bring a bunch of players with him, or he did not like really change the team the way he would perhaps liked. The only 2 players that he brought was Jorginho and Higuain as a loan in January.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give him a lot of credit to be able to still impose his style of play, be stubborn, and finished 3rd in the Premier League, where last year I don't believe they were in the top 4. And then also going to the final of the Europa League.
I'll give them a 7. I'll give them a 7 for, but it's I'm very reluctant to do that.
Okay,
I'll give them a 7 because you know what? At the end of the day, they finished 3rd,
which
I wasn't expecting, let's say, 5-6 weeks ago.
Yeah,
I mean 5-6 weeks ago I thought United were gonna finish 3rd.
Yeah, man. I remember when we, you know,
when
United were on fire, winning like all those games, you were like, oh man, we're gonna finish 3rd be 3rd by far, you
up
know?
Until we should have comfortably been 3rd.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, in football things changes, you know, all the time. But you know, up until the PSG game, like we were the first, we were number one, you know, ever since Ole took over.
Yeah.
And that this is a period when, you know, we were flying. Chelsea and Arsenal were going down. So, you know, that's what I saw back then.
Yeah.
And I would say that they're third because, you know what? Like, you look at their last five games, they have one victory.
Yeah.
You know, they have one victory. That's not enough. And that just speaks to the quality of the teams that are under them right now. Hmm. So because they finished, you know, in their Europa League final and their third, whatever, I'll give them a seven, but
all right.
Yeah,
all
they
right.
Have a good season at all. All
right, man. So fourth, Tottenham, you know, for a big chunk of the season, they were third,
mm-hmm.
Behind Man City and Liverpool.
They're comfortably third.
At some point, I think, before the Man City game, if they would have beaten Man City, they would at some point there it was a debate whether they're gonna actually challenge for the title or
yes.
Like points wise mm-hmm. they were not that far from those top two, but then
we know what happens
a lot of
them.
Things happens, you know.
We know
Kane came back to the team and he destroyed everything. Yeah,
he fucked it up.
But you know, they're in the final of the Champions League. Big achievement for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the same squad. They is the only team that did no signings in the summer and no signings in January.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, fourth, I think that's the goal for a team like Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
To, in my opinion, if you're Tottenham, you finish top four every season, that's a big success for you.
Mm-hmm.
They had a new stadium. They built a new stadium. The new stadium is ready, and they're gonna play in their new stadium.
That's great for
next
them.
Year.
Like on a marketing commercial level, and just like
financially, exactly financially,
like stature of the club.
Yep.
Yeah, that has to be one of the best stadiums in Europe right now.
Yeah, so. I don't know what criticism do you have for Tottenham this year, man? Because for me, they have been that's the best Tottenham I've ever seen.
Well, to me,
not that I've ever
seen,
but
to me, they had two seasons as well. You know, just like Chelsea, Arsenal. I'm gonna separate the Europa League, the Champions League, sorry, and so I'm gonna separate the form in Europe and the form domestically, because for a team that lost 13 games. They were third for a while, and they had lost 13 games. When you lose 13 games, like, you should be seventh or eighth or something like that, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
You look at other leagues, like, you know, La Liga or Serie A, whatever. If you lose 13 games, you're not even in the top six. So, you know, once again, I'm going to sound very repetitive, but this just speaks to the quality of the teams that were around Tottenham. And, of course, you know, I'm not going to be too harsh on them because this is a team that doesn't spend money on players. This is a team that has always been cash-strapped. And they're going to be even more cash-strapped because they just bought a new stadium. That's over $1 billion in investment.
Yeah.
So you're going to have, less money there. But I'm happy for them, you know, the fact that they are in the Champions League final. No, they have a shot at winning the Champions League. And you know, they could win the Champions League before Arsenal does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very entertaining as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a great season that they had on that level, you know, European level. You know, I mean, they didn't. It's not like they got there luckily. You know, they eliminated Manchester City. They eliminated Ajax as well when you know, the odds were against them. Actually, they qualified against Barcelona. And actually, Lucas Moura's goal against Barcelona is the one that qualified them for the next stage. And here again, he was a hero. What I would say, though, is Pochettino. Recently, he's been, you know, in the paper saying that, you know what, if I win the Champions League with Spurs, maybe I can just call it a day and like go back to Argentina, you know, just drop everything and start eating carne asada and all that shit. But also, recently, he's been vocal about the level of spending. He said, "It will be unreasonable to have the same demands for next year, for example, like the same standards and demands. It will just be unreasonable." So I don't know what type of deal he has with Daniel Levy. I know that he signed a deal last year, something like that.
Yeah, he renewed
five
his
more
contract.
Years.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the hell he's gonna get away from that. I don't know if he has like a specific clause that allows him to do something or like gives him freedom, but I think that it's interesting what he's been saying in the papers lately, and I want to see what happens this summer. Actually, I want to see what happens this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And to end with Tottenham, I would say Son is my favorite player this year.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And score 100%. Out of 10,
out of 10, I would say 7.5, 8.
Really?
Just because of the Champions League final.
I give them a 9. A 9 because top 4, success 100%. Yeah. Final of the Champions League, unbelievable. So I would give them a 9. Spending $0 in the summer and January transfer window. Mm-hmm. For me, out of all these teams, to be honest, they're the one who gets the highest score. 9 out of 10.
Oh, no. For me, it's Liverpool. Easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Easy.
All right. All right, man. Arsenal.
They had a weird season.
New
well.
Coach, Unai Emery.
Mm-hmm.
Same squad, right? I don't believe they bought... Well, I mean, they bought... Yeah,
actually,
they bought Torreira.
A couple of players. They bought Torreira. They bought Mkhitaryan. They brought
Papadopoulos.
Socrates,
Papadopoulos, yeah.
Whatever his name is. They bought Bernard Leno. They bought Guendouzi. So they actually bought a couple players.
Oh, yeah.
Got that guy... what's his name? Denis Suarez?
Yeah, whatever. The from Barcelona on loan.
Yeah, some people said he looked like a guy.
We don't
guy,
need to spend like a second
guy,
on this guy.
A guy who's majoring in art.
No offense to him, but he did not really do anything. He did not play any role this season, whether with Arsenal or with Barcelona.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, they reached the Champions League, the Europa League final as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's Unai Emery's competition. He won it 3 years in a row with Sevilla. And, you know, they had two seasons as well. We can separate the European form and the domestic form. You know, last year they got eliminated in the semifinal, actually, in the Europa League. So that's progress on their part. But, you know, they're just, like, far too inconsistent. They have 10 losses, 7 draws, you know, and 21 wins. So, yeah, I mean, that's about right, you know, as far as their position, finishing 5th. There's gonna be. I'm interested to see what happens in the summer over there as well, because I'm sure that you know there are some players he's not happy with. I'm curious to see what's gonna happen. What the hell's gonna happen with Ozil?
Yeah.
Because I don't understand this guy, or what's going on. I think he's been depressed for a couple of years actually.
A couple of years.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Like,
man.
No. Like I'm saying this
with all the numbers that he puts in.
No, and I don't want to say, I know we always like make fun of this guy, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make fun of like a serious thing, like, you know, being depressed and all that. But I think he's been depressed because this is a guy who was on top of the world when he was at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
He was really, really, really up there. But, you know, recently, I mean, he's been phased out of the German national squad for the wrong reasons, in my opinion. But this is just a guy who's, he's a has-been, we can say. He's not really the player. We saw him like maybe one or two seasons at Arsenal, mm-hmm. since he joined in, what was it, 2013? I remember I was still in college.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things to resolve. But I'm happy with what Aubameyang has done this year. Like I said, has done this year as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Aubameyang, you know, finishing a joint top scorer. Even when he got purchased last year, he just like started firing like directly when he got bought in January. So, you know, these are players that they can build a team around. You know, they're very young, still very fresh, and they have a lot to offer physically and all that. You know.
Yeah, I think they have a pretty healthy squad.
They do. They can add to that.
They can really add to that. But in all positions, a lot of their players are really youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a lot of talents.
Yeah.
So I believe, like...
They got Bellerin, who had a nasty injury this year as well. We can talk about that. I'm sure that impacted their form.
Yeah. Because
this is a very, very, very important player. Obviously, they have Ramsey, who's going to Juve, that they're going to have to replace. In my opinion, they have a healthy squad. They're in a healthy position right now.
Yeah.
I think there's some shuffling that's going to be done in the summer as far as upstairs. Because that guy left, what's his name, Mislintat. Who came on board and brought all these German Dortmund connection players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that they're looking at a technical director or some shit like that. So I don't know when that decision is going to be made.
Yeah.
And but whenever that is made, I'm curious to see what's going to happen in the summer, you know, who's going to go for who and which players they can get, you know. I think they're in a healthy position though. And if they win the Europa League final, which I think they will, they're going to be in the Champions League next year. So that will be a return, a homecoming for them, because it's been how many seasons? 3?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's crazy actually to mention that.
What's your score, man, for Arsenal?
I would say 7 as well.
7?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'd say 6.57 actually.
Really?
Yeah.
For me, it's more like a 7.58 if they win the Europa League.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason also is because I think a lot of the players disappointed Unai Emery. I think as a coach, he wanted to impose a lot of his ideas, and a lot of times the players let him down. But mm-hmm. regardless, they finished fifth, which does not qualify to the Champions League. So, but they are at the final of the Europa League, so they have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, 7.5 for me, man.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, so let's. I don't know how to start with this. I don't know how to start with this, man. All right,
let me start.
Manchester United. Let me just give you like a my like 1 or 2 minute spiel, and then you can go fully on a
this is the most composed you will see me actually.
But to be honest, man, Manchester United this season, same thing. They had two different managers. So with Mourinho, it was the same disappointing results and style of play. Because they were not performing that well with Mourinho, and then sometimes the results were here and sometimes not. And then when Solskjaer came over, they were on fire. I think for the first 10 games or so, I think they had the most points out of all the teams when he first started. They were on fire, but the performance has dipped a lot.
Eight losses in the past ten games.
A couple of success. De Gea has led them down also, but he's not alone. But a lot of the different, a lot of games where if your goalkeeper makes a huge mistake and you concede a goal, it's really, really hard to get back from that.
Mm-hmm.
They were knocked out of the Champions League against, Barcelona. But again, I think De Gea played a big part. Maybe they had a chance to do something against Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Premier League, that's like the worst position for Manchester United since I don't know when. Did it ever happen that Manchester United was sixth in the last, ever since Ferguson left?
Are you serious? We finished seventh when Moyes was here.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay, look, so let's say it's a small. Okay.
Six actually has been our position. We finished sixth like maybe three times.
Okay.
We finished seventh once.
Yeah.
We finished fourth once and then second last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it's a season to forget, I think, for Manchester United, of course. But perhaps the best is still to come if you trust that Solskjaer will really try to change the team.
Mm-hmm.
He's at least a coach that the players were really vocal about him getting a permanent contract. So it seemed that they loved him, but I don't know what changed, man. But go ahead.
I'll start.
Tackle it, man.
So I'm just going to start, this is what I usually do here whenever I'm preparing the podcast. I'm very involved on like Bleacher Report and just like Instagram, like whoever, like all these like soccer pages, football pages that post stats and all that. So I always like screenshot everything.
Yeah.
Just so I can have like, if I don't have time to make notes,
mm-hmm.
so I can have that as a reminder of what I'm going to talk about. All right. First thing, points difference between Manchester City and Manchester United.
Yeah.
In the past four seasons.
Yeah.
2015, 2016, 0 points.
Okay.
All right. 2016, 2017, 9 points. Obviously, all of this is Man City's on top, obviously.
Yeah.
We know
that.
Yeah. 2017, 2018, 19 points. This was last year.
Yeah.
With Mourinho and Guardiola. And this year, 2018, 2019, 32 points. Okay. Yeah. That's number one. So just so you can see the levels there. United this year finished 6th, obviously. 19 wins, 9 draws, and 10 losses. All right. Also, a goal difference of 11. Arsenal is above us with 22 points. I mean, 22 points.
Double.
22. And, yeah. So exactly, there you go. Double. We have like there's as many points. Like we're as close to the top as we're close to the bottom. Actually, there's 32 points between United and Manchester City. And there is 32 points between Cardiff City and Manchester United. So that just says everything. Although we're 6 and there are 18 teams in the league, which is the third of that.
Yeah.
I mean, last year we finished second. I believe Mourinho said that it was his biggest achievement, blah, blah, as a coach.
Yeah, he said it was a really important achievement.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna...
Maybe it was not wrong, man.
Maybe it was not wrong, but anyway, that's just Mourinho talk for me. I'm not going to unpack that because then we're going to be here for the next 5 hours. But what I would say is, you look at Liverpool, they finished fourth. They were in the Europe, they're in the Champions League final. They saw positions that needed to be bettered, and they improved on that. Facts. As a result, they gained 28 points. And you know, we finished second, bro.
Yeah.
Which is not bad in the grand scheme of things. But then when you see that we finished actually 19 points below City, that's actually criminal. And then what do we do to make up for these 19 points? We sign a goalkeeper. Third choice goalkeeper. Freaking Lee Grant from Stoke City.
So it doesn't count. Yeah, I mean, I don't know
what type of signing was that.
Don't count it.
But no, this is just to speak about the mentality and the lack of direction. Even if it was free, I believe you got him for like 1 million or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why we did that.
Okay.
We can take like whichever goalkeeper from the reserve, but we spend resources and time.
Time
to get a third choice goalkeeper.
Okay.
And then we got Fred, you know, midfielder. Fair enough. You know, we needed something in the midfield. And we got Diogo Dalot as well. You know, obviously a fullback, you know, 19 years old. Still a lot to do, a lot to learn defensively and all that. But I believe he's there for the future. So that's fair. And that's pretty much it. So you have 19 points to make up for, and that's what you did. Obviously, you spoke about the David De Gea mistakes and all that. To me, this is what I'll say. David De Gea, like what he's done for us in the last 6-7 years. I mean, for me, he has so much money in the bank. To do whichever mistakes.
Okay.
Obviously, it sucks because as a goalie, your mistakes are a lot heavier than if you're a defender or a midfielder, for example. Or a striker. Because you're the last, you know, as a striker, you miss goals, but you can always put in more. You can miss three goals, but score four.
One goal and get the 3 points.
Exactly, in the same game.
The team is good,
As a goalie, if you make a mistake, that's a direct goal.
Yeah.
So you can't really take that back. Even if you make more saves, at the end of the day, you conceded 2 or 3 or 4 goals.
Yeah.
So that's what's harsh. About being a goalkeeper. It's a very lonely position, actually. But, you know, I don't know what happened at the end of this year, but he done, like, the mistakes directly leading to a goal. The amount that he's done in just, like, the past 4, 5, 6 games.
Sure.
That's as much as he's done in the previous 100.
Yeah.
So that's the level of consistency and excellence that David De Gea was at. And that, you know, that's just a paragraph. To me, it was a really, really weird season. In my opinion, I think that Manchester United fans have reached a breaking point right now. I think that everybody is tired and, you know, tired of like everything that's going on at the club. The lack of direction, the lack of planning, just the fact that the club is the priority lies at the commercial level. We just have no idea what we're doing footballing-wise. We're making fun of Liverpool. We're making fun of Arsenal, Tottenham, and all that. But the reality is, these are teams that they're still planning for things, especially Liverpool. You know, when Klopp got there 3 years ago, I mean, they had players that, if I mention their names, you won't even believe me that they were there, like the freaking Markovic, the Joe Allen. Lallana's still there, but you know he's not even in the picture. I mean, it was just like crazy. And this is a team that has evolved. For us, I don't know what's going on. Right now, you know, we're hearing that there's gonna be a clear out, whatever, blah blah. But to be honest, I don't believe a single thing that I hear, whether it's from the manager or from
You don't believe what the manager says. Is that because? Like, make it clear. Is that because you don't trust the manager? Or is it because you don't trust the board or the leadership at Manchester United?
No, I'm beyond the manager 100%.
Okay.
I think it's too early to judge him. I mean, like, the thing is, in football, we have like such short memories. It's actually embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because you know, we always remember what did you do for me most recently? You know, the past 10 games have been like horrible, but the 14 games before that were tremendous. You know.
Yeah.
So I've seen the heights that we can reach with this manager and mm-hmm. with the same quality of players, by the way.
Yeah.
Like the same team, the same players that reached such heights, that were doing unbelievable things, now are incapable of beating two sides that have been relegated 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago already.
Yeah.
And that haven't even won games like the entire season. So to me, this is what happens with Manchester United. Like, managers come here and they have all these ambitions, they have all these ideas, blah, blah. But the reality is that they get there and they get crushed. It happened with Mourinho. Everybody, every manager, you know, with their big manager ego, they think that, oh, you know, this is what's happened in the last 5 years, but I'll be there and I'll change that. You know, I'm sure a guy like Mourinho, that's why he took on that challenge.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Solskjaer, a different caliber manager, you know, obviously from the Norwegian league, and also very, very much younger and with less experience. But, you know, he's one of us and blah, blah, blah. But this is what happens to me as well. He comes here, he has ideas, whatever, but he's going to be crushed. And I'm actually, Guardiola, like not to, you know, when Ferguson was talking to Guardiola in like 2013, whatever, before he retired, and he was like sounding him out for the United position, that might be the best decision that Pep Guardiola has ever made in his career.
Not taking the menu.
Because it would have ruined his reputation.
Yeah.
It would have ruined his reputation.
And his career. Cause
in his career, yeah, for sure. I really believe what I'm saying right now. And this is what I'll say. I mean, so, two last points. Solskjaer, he said, you know, he's disappointed me in the last week or so because he's in the media saying that, you know, oh, I'm going to be successful here. What I'll say is that, you know, some players who are here right now will not be part of my successful team.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And he's like, you know, there's going to be a clear out, blah, blah, blah. Some players, you know, there will be a change of personnel. It'll take a lot more windows. You know, we're not ready to compete for the title, even for the next 3 years, we're just not going to be there. Like, you have to lower your expectations.
Okay.
And then, you know, last game of the season yesterday, nothing to play for, really. Just send the kids, you know, like, there's literally nothing to play for. We don't care between fifth or sixth place. There's no difference for me.
Yeah.
And I would actually rather not be in the Europa League. I'd rather finish seventh and not be in the Europa League because, in my opinion, that's a huge distraction. And then I see Young playing. I see Phil Jones playing. I see Smalling playing. I see who played to the left? That was actually Young. So I see players who, I mean, I almost go crazy because I'm like, okay, you're saying these things, but then you're not being truthful to yourself. Ashley Young, I saw like a heat map yesterday and like some stats. Like out of 12 crosses, only one cross yeah. reached a Manchester United player. I mean, it's actually unbelievable what he does and the fact that he's our captain. So I think that sends the wrong message to players, you know. If you have some players like Pogba, Martial, whatever, and you know, we can talk about their attitudes at times. But if your standards are a little bit different for different sets of players, you know, just because they work hard, we don't care about work hard. Like, I can work hard as well, but yeah. I have no place in being in that Manchester United team.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's the same thing for Ashley Young or for freaking Phil Jones, for example. To me, if you say that this is the standard that you expect from certain players, you have to apply for other players as well. I think that if you're in that dressing room, and you're not getting selected, but then you have players who are not doing anything at all, and they're still getting selected, still have the captain's armband, I think that sends a wrong message to the players. And to end my discussion here, I think that we'll see a lot of important players who will leave this season as well. Mm. This is a crucial point because we already need 4 more players on top of what we have right now, currently.
Yes.
Okay?
So if you get rid of...
So now we are at a point where we already need 4 more players, and then we're going to get rid of like even more players and big part players, actually.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Valencia is gone. I wouldn't say that he's important anymore, but, you know, he's spent the last 10 years of his life at the club. So, you know, shout out to him and thank you for your service and all that shit. Andrera is gone. That was officialized as well 2 weeks ago. 2 days ago, sorry. Which, you know, we had heard about already. It's sad, you know. We can talk about that another day, as to why that happened, why they let that happen. But then players like Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, Ashley Young signed new contracts in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
So you know, just to show you what's going on, I think that David De Gea could leave. He hasn't signed a contract. He's free next summer, I believe.
He wanted to leave a couple years ago, but he got sabotaged his transfer to Real Madrid.
This is what I'll say about De Gea. He's tried to leave once or twice in the past already.
Yeah.
But what I would say is that he is an unbelievable professional. He never like sulked or anything like that. You know, when the whole facts episode with Van Gaal happened, He wasn't selected for a couple of games. But then as soon as he got back on track, he signed a contract. You know, obviously we gave him a lot of money. And he applied himself again to the cause, committed to the cause all the time. So I have nothing to say. Like, if De Gea wants to leave because he has ambition, I have absolutely no problem about that. I'll bring him to the airport. Mm-hmm. Gladly. I think he could leave. I think Paul Pogba could leave as well. I think Lukaku could leave.
Whoa.
I think Alexis Sanchez could leave as well.
Marcel could leave as well?
I think Marcel could leave as well. Mm. And so these are, you know, it's hard to... I don't think everyone will leave because, you know, it's hard to replace that many players in one window. But that's just the probability of you know, important players that could leave for different reasons, you know, all of them. Pogba, I mean, obviously he's 26 right now, going to 27, world champion. He played in the Europa League with us already in his first year. You know, if he's like, you know what, I don't need another season in the Europa League, and he deems that United have not progressed as he thought they could, you know, in this first season, you know, when, you know, the whole Mourinho glamour was here, Ibrahimovic glamour was here, Mkhitaryan glamour was here. You know, I thought that, you know, he thought, okay, you know what, we're going to go here, we're going to change this team. You know, we have Mourinho, we have Ibrahimovic, we have all these players, like, we can do something, come on. But then what happens now, we've actually gone backwards. So if he wants to go to Real Madrid, go on. As long as I get my money back, plus profit, of course. You know, if I get, like, between 120, 150, I'm happy.
All right.
Sell him. Same thing for De Gea. If I get, you know, as close to 100 mil as possible,
okay,
you know, because he has 12 months left on his contract, I'll take that as well, because then he's free next year. And then we're going to spend more money to try to get another goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, my prediction for these two players, I don't believe Pogba is going to leave for more than 110. That's my prediction, right? Mm-hmm. And De Gea, I think because he only has 12 months, I don't believe is gonna go above 75.
Well, the thing is, I don't. So you got a point for the last one there, because obviously Real Madrid doesn't want him anymore because they have Courtois now.
Yeah, and
they have Courtois, you know, I believe he's better than Courtois, but that's a huge investment that they made in Courtois, so they just can't, you know, go back on that. I would say, as far as like world class teams that need goalkeepers, I would say Juve need a goalkeeper, because I just don't see Chesney as a guy
world class.
You know, yeah, exactly. So I think they need a goalkeeper. But this is a team that, you know, they spent 117 million on Ronaldo last year.
Yeah.
And they finished to, you know, they failed to get that Champions League trophy that they're going so behind. So that's a loss. That's a loss because as far as finances in Italy there, like, I think that they really, really took this bet because they were so confident of winning it. Just to say that, you know, financially, like, the books will be affected and all that. Also, they signed Ramsey on a free for sure, but they're giving him, like, what, 400,000 a week? And we don't see that in Italy.
Yeah.
I mean, only, like, the Ronaldos get way more than that. Nobody's close to that. So I don't even know why they spent that much on him, because it's not like he's a marketing, like, potential player. You know, he's not a Dybala or Pogba or Salah or Griezmann that will like sell jerseys or like just be very appealing, like, you know, in terms of marketing. So I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a huge question for me. But then there's Paris Saint Germain. You know, obviously they extended Buffon's contract for a year. I believe that what's his name, Kevin Trapp, he's on loan at Frankfurt, so I don't think he's gonna come back. But then they have Alphonse Auréola, whatever.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, is an academy product, I believe, still fairly young. But PSG is a team that could have that could have a need for a goalkeeper. I think that they will be prepared to spend at least 75 million on De Gea, at least. And, you know, if we're good about it, we can just push on for a little more. Because Ander Herrera is already going to PSG.
Yeah.
And they're friends. And I think that Mata is leaving as well.
Okay.
On a free, because he hasn't signed a contract either.
Yeah.
So I think that the whole, like, Spanish, you know, amigo, whatever, will be disbanded. And this is what happens. Like, people don't really think about that. Like, as fans, we don't really think about the like, these people are not robots, you know? They're part of a squad. And as part of a squad, there's always little groups here and there, mm-hmm. you know? I don't really know what's the make of the Liverpool. But for me, I know that there's the Spanish, Spanish, you know, Latin, Hispanic area, you know, with the Valencias, the Eric Bailly, just because, you know, he was in La Liga and he speaks Spanish as well. You know, the David De Gea, the Ander Herrera, the Mata, the Antonio Valencia, the Fred Pereira and all that. And then there's the academy group, you know, of the Rashfords, the Lingard, the Pogba.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, he played with them before. Lukaku as well, and Martial by association, you know, just because, you know, they're French, all French-speaking, all that. You know, young, same lifestyle, kind of. So those are the groups. And, you know, if the Spanish group is dismantled, and this is the position we're in right now, nothing guarantees that we're even going to challenge for top four next season. So I think that if those players want to leave, you know, fair enough. And I'm ready for them to go as well. Right now, it's just, you know, time for a big rebuild. And as a team and as an organization, we have to be serious about it. If not, nothing will change next year.
So what would you give the score? What would you give out of 10 for Manchester United?
4.5. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, if I was in your position, I would have given, like, you know, 4 or 3. For me, man, I would give them a 6 just because they showed... Just because they did, like, an impressive remontada against PSG. They showed for the first 10 games with Solskjaer how much potential the team has, but they were not able to deliver on this potential regardless of some, you know, good moments, good feelings mm-hmm. that you could have had for the team. So I would give them a 6, but yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, guys. That's it. You want to add anything for this episode, man? Or so hopefully we're gonna do another end of the season analysis with different guests as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to bring a lot of different people who support different teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when each of us will be gonna be able to, you know, elaborate and debate on who's wrong and who's right.
That's it.
But yeah, that's it for this episode, guys. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you all, and stay tuned for you know, all the episodes that we have coming on. Champions League, preview,
Europa League are not
Europa
done,
League
yep.
and all that.
Yep.
So yeah,
all right, guys, peace
thank
out
you for listening. Peace.